Hey, Paige.
Hi, Pixel.
So, my life has pretty drastically settled down the past few weeks. So, instead of a recent anecdote, I decided we're going to hop in the Wayback Machine and
Oh,
hear
boy.
an anecdote from Pixel's freshman year of college.
Okay.
So, just to set the scene, I'm in my dorm. It's a double. I share it with my childhood best friend, which is maybe another story for another time.
Are you
And
still best friends
no,
with this
God, no,
person?
which is why that's another story for another time. Anyway, it's like 1 in the morning. I've got class at 8 in the morning, but I'm tootling around on Facebook when I get this message from a gentleman named Danny that I went to high school with. Met him in middle school. We've been friends throughout. Danny, he had, I'm not sure what his condition was, but when he was younger, he had leg braces and he had those arm crutch things. He outgrew them by high school. He didn't use them anymore. But people were cruel and awful. And Danny was great and he was my friend and we were buddies.
Hell yeah, Danny.
Well, wait.
Oh no.
So anyway, Danny messages me at 1 in the morning. He's like, "Hey, how you doing? I haven't talked since graduation." I'm like, "Oh my God, Danny, what's up?" So he's like, "Are you dating anyone?" And I'm like,
Uh-oh.
"No, of course not. Never. Never in life. What do you mean am I dating anyone?" And he starts asking all these questions, why not? What do you mean you're not dating anyone? Are you into girls? Is that what's going on?" And at the time I was like, "No." But so we were talking back and forth and he's like, "Did you know I had the biggest crush on you when we were in school?" And at this point my first assumption is either he's lying to make a joke of me, or someone else has hacked into his account. That's how poor my self-esteem was at the time, because I immediately was like, this isn't true. This can't be true.
Girl, my self-esteem is still like that.
So anyway, and not anymore. But at the time I was like, this who? So I start asking these questions, prove to me that you're Danny. And he does.
To me, prove,
He does. He proved that he was
prove.
Danny. So I'm like, okay. And I'm like, Danny would never, he wouldn't be mean in this particular way because people were mean to him. He wouldn't do this.
Right,
I'm like,
right.
fuck, what? So anyway, we're talking. He's like, "Would you have dated me in high school?" And I'm like, probably not. And I just never felt like we were friends.
Right,
If I was gonna have feelings, I would have had them. Never
right,
had them.
right.
Just trying to be honest with my friend. He's like, "Oh no, why not? Is it because I wasn't this or this or this, or I wasn't smart enough or cute enough?" I'm like, "Danny, it's not about, I just didn't, there was no magnet. There was no pull. It's
Right,
just,
right.
but I'm trying to
You're a fine person, but
fit."
there's
Yeah.
no spark, you
I
know?
loved you like a friend. You were my friend though. Trying to pat him on the head. And then he comes with this fucking haymaker. He's like, "I jerked off to you all the time." I was
My
like,
God, don't tell people
okay, well, here's
that.
the thing. At the time, I was purity culture horrified. Now, honestly, I'm down. I'm flattered. But at the time,
I don't want to know.
that's fine. Different strokes different strokes for different folks. But anyway, this isn't the best part of the story. I at the time I'm like, "Danny, I would rather you not ever say that to me again." The next day,
No.
I log on to Facebook and I see that he has proposed to his girlfriend that day.
What?
So,
He was shooting his
literally,
shot.
he's like, "I have this ring. I have this plan, but there's this one that got away, and I got to make sure that's not." I literally almost prevented a marriage from happening
Hot damn.
if I had had it. But also, they're like, he's a single dad. Now, that marriage did not last. Listen, so listeners at home, if you are thinking of proposing to someone and the last thing you want to do is make sure somebody else isn't into you, don't propose. You're not
No,
invested
that's
enough to get
not.
married. Not at all. Also, a freshman year of college, that's young to be getting married.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my story about Danny. That's your real name. You know who you are. If you're listening to this by some chance, you ever rub it out to me still? I'm curious. You're allowed. Anyway, Welcome to Paige and Pixel. Today we have a book episode, don't we, Paige?
Yeah, we do.
Go ahead. I'm done all with right. that. I'm so Perfect. Thoroughly done. I might never tell that story again.
All right.
It might be out of my system.
I mean, it's immortalized now.
It's a good story, too,
It
right?
is a good story. All I don't right. think I'll ever have a story like that.
That you know of.
Oh,
if you've ever rubbed one out to Paige, tell me. I want to know.
Maybe next episode, my anecdote will be the worst Red Robin date ever.
Yes.
So.
Yes, absolutely. File that away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Before we get into this, I want to have a serious moment. I sure know how to pick books that deal with some rough topics, but I just want to put a bit of a content warning, a trigger warning. This book, and also most likely the discussion, is going to tackle some heavy subjects: abortion, domestic violence, gun violence, depression, mental health. If those topics are upsetting to you, triggering to you, are going to cause you any sort of distress, take care of yourself first. Maybe don't listen to this episode. I don't want our listens, our downloads are not more important than your mental health.
Okay, I'll back you up on that this time. I'll back you up on that this time.
This time?
Oh yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Pixel doesn't want you to be put in harm's way.
Really don't. I don't want anybody to harm themselves because of something that we say. That's absolutely true. Downloads are the most important thing to me.
So maybe start it,
yes.
put it on mute and just let it play so that you can still support
Give us.
Give
the bump, but don't hurt yourself in the process.
Yeah, do that. Perfect.
See, that's a win-win. That's a compromise.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, okay. So working in an abortion clinic in Chicago in a post Roe v. Wade world is probably already an incredibly stressful job.
I would say so.
Now imagine not only are a bunch of aggressive pro-life jerks constantly attacking you, there are literal actual demons attacking your clinic as well.
I love a story where the demons are the pro-life people, or the anti-choice people are the demons.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. Also, the church I grew up in organized protests outside of abortion clinics.
We're going to get into that.
Yep.
For sure.
I know all about that bullshit.
That is what is happening to our main character, Nisha. I forgot to look up the name pronunciations.
Nisha sounds like a name.
Nisha, I believe.
Okay.
That's my bad. But this book is called We Dance Upon Demons by Vaishnavi Patel. Let's get lit, y'all.
Yeehaw!
Yeehaw!
Seems like somewhat inappropriate, given the subject matter, to be like, we're going to get lit and talk about the horrors of life.
Let's get literary, my good fellows.
Oh, that was way worse.
Okay.
Let's just keep moving. Yep.
All right. So our book opens with our main character, Nisha Kulkarni, as she heads into her shift on the first day of Lent. I learned that apparently, I don't know if this is since you know so much, is it common that the 40 days of Lent are notorious for being a time when pro-life protesters are more active?
Oh, you know what? I totally believe that. Like, I don't know.
It's like 40 days for life.
Yes, that's a fucking thing. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. My God. Okay, so the church I grew up in didn't observe Lent because it was too fucking Catholic, which is a whole other thing. But, like, 40 days for life. Like, we had pamphlets. Oh, my. I'm, like, fucking, my heart is racing and I'm sweating. God. Like, that
are
is.
Are we not going to be able to?
No.
Are we
I'm triggered, but I have agreed to this. No, that's totally. Oh my God, I never put it together that it was the 40. mm-hmm. Oh my God, my church is the villain of. Okay, not my church anymore. Not my fucking. Whew. Huh. I'm good. I'm fine. I'm here. I'm in the present. I am not back in the early 2000s. I broke free. I got out of the high control setting. I'm Pixel. I am Pixel. Okay, continue.
Okay. they call the pro-life protesters anties in this, A-N-T-I, like
sure.
anti-choice.
Choice.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if that's, like, normal or if that's just for the book, but Anyway, they are super active right now. On top of that, when she gets to the clinic, she finds her ex, Aaron, has started as an attending physician at the clinic. The last time they spoke, Aaron himself was a pro-life, anti-abortion protester.
Oh, so what is this? Is this a change of heart? Is this a plant?
We'll see.
Oh.
Nisha is immediately upset and suspicious.
Yeah.
Even after Aaron assures everyone that he is not anti-abortion, he is pro-choice.
I love dead fetuses now. I changed my mind.
In order to cool off, Nisha goes to one of her favorite places, the Art Institute of Chicago.
Love it.
More specifically, the Indian Art Exhibit. There, she is drawn to a statue that is, for some reason, not encased in any glass. It's just kind of chilling out in the open.
That happens.
And she touches it.
Oh.
Immediately passes out.
Oh, good.
When she comes to, there is a strange man there offering to help her. But Aaron shows up.
Mm.
Because he wants to try to explain himself and apologize. But Nisha is having none of it. And she bounces.
So did he, like, follow her there? Or does he just know that's where she goes? Because they used to date? Or
I think somebody at the clinic said something about, like, oh, she likes to go down to the Art Institute, I think, is what happened.
That's why, folks, you got to change up your patterns. You got to keep your head on a swivel. If you run every day, you got to change your route. Like, people can't just be knowing where you are all the time. You can't be predictable. You got to stay safe out there.
Stay safe out there, y'all. So after this happens, she starts being stalked by, like, strange people and having nightmares about the man in the museum.
Mm.
And then on top of that, she is also, so her job at the clinic is, she's not a doctor. She is in charge of, like, organizing volunteers and doing community stuff. Like, that's her role there. So she is struggling to find volunteers.
Yep.
I
could imagine.
Why. Yeah. So she ends up catching up with an old friend named JJ from college. And
did JJ used to jerk off thinking about her?
I don't think so. JJ is a girl.
Did JJ used to rub one out thinking about her? Did they have that conversation at 1 a.m. on Facebook Messenger their freshman year?
Not in the book. Who knows about
IRL?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. Very specific question. Anyway, she agrees to help be a volunteer.
Sweet.
And then everything starts getting real, real weird.
Mm-hmm.
She is escorting a patient into the clinic, and their patient has their child there. Their child is super nervous, and she essentially, in her mind, is like, please just forget about this. Forget about this. Like, please don't remember. And this child immediately forgets where he is and what he is doing.
Okay.
So, super weird.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Are you okay?
No. I had such a hard time writing this episode because I think I didn't hate the book and I didn't love the book. I have very neutral feelings towards this book.
Oh, that's the worst place to be
in. So, it's... like, I'm just having a hard time remembering everything that I'm supposed to be talking about.
Wow.
Anyway.
Ringing endorsement.
Yeah, so sorry. Holy shit.
God.
So, that night, the man from the museum, the weird man who showed up after she passed out, shows up at her door.
Sweet.
And, introduces himself as Moya. Nisha confronts him, asking if he is a Rakshasa or a demon.
Okay.
But she's been doing some research on the side.
Okay. I just feel like so many things would have to happen that were wiggity before I'd be like, you a demon?
People have been showing up at her door and, like, stalking her and showing up to the clinic. Like, and like weird stuff.
I mean,
and then she's like making people forget shit, and like she can like tell that these people are not right, and then she's having dreams about demons.
Okay,
and all this stuff.
Okay,
it's there's.
Okay.
I'm just trying to like
No. I get it. I just feel like my threshold of like things that would have to go wiggity before I would jump to demons is like really, really high.
Like she does kind of go through. She's like, is it because I'm tired? Is it because I'm depressed? Am I going crazy? Do I need like, am I having hallucinations? Like she does go through.
I feel like my assumption would be like, is this like an organized like fucking gang stalking thing because of what I do and because of the people that hate this and like right. want to. Or, you know what, demons, sure.
But she touched the statue.
Listen, I've touched a lot of things I'm not supposed to in this short life of mine.
Listen, it doesn't feel like too big of a jump in the book.
Okay, sure. You know what? I'll believe you. I'll just believe it.
Sorry.
No, I'm good.
My recapping skills are not great.
Then what the fuck are we doing with this podcast?
I don't know.
That's the whole fucking point of the
show. Well, yeah, I know. But I still feel like I suck at it.
No. Okay. No, babes. I feel like most of the time... I'm not blaming you because I blame this middling. Just keep going.
Okay. She realizes that Moya is short for... Holy shit, I cannot talk today. And I'm going to butcher this because I forgot to look up the pronunciation. Moyalagan?
Sure.
Moyalagan? One of those. Which is another name for Apasmara, who is the Hindu demon of ignorance.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
They have one of those?
Yeah.
Who? Okay. So who is the white people? Demon of ignorance. Like, who in our life, like, who in the world today, who in pop, who's the demon? Is RFK Jr. the demon of ignorance? Just to bring him on back for this episode.
Maybe.
I think he fucking might be. I'm nominating him.
Anyway, so he reveals that when she touched the statue, she freed him and was given the gift of true sight and a small amount of his power. So that's how she's able to see the demons and why she thinks she's going crazy. And then she's like, no, I think these are real demons. Because she's like, to other people, they look like humans. But to her, they're like, they look like demons.
Oh.
They look creepy. Yeah.
So the demon of ignorance imparts true sight.
I think any demon can impart true sight. I'm not 100%
okay.
sure.
I just feel like the demon of ignorance would impart like literally the opposite. But the fuck do I know?
Yeah. And in the book, they kind of explain, like, throughout history, demons used to give their power and stuff more often before they realized it was, like, causing them to die out. So, yeah. So this used to be a common thing that happened. You'll see.
And is her knowing his name, so, like, in a lot of, like, mythologies, knowing a demon's name is a form of power and control over them. That's not a thing here.
Mm-mm.
Sick.
Yeah. So he tells her before he leaves he cannot reveal everything to her, but that she will be able to look into the past by doing something that brings her total peace. So she tries doing a bunch of, like, she tries taking a bath, she tries just, like, sitting and, like, meditating, and none of it's working. But what we learn is that Nisha used to love to dance, but stopped after she was in a bad accident and has been struggling with depression. She realizes that the only way she is going to be able to do this looking back is by dancing. So she puts on some music and begins to dance. Everything she knows starts flooding back to her. And this is when we get our first flashback into the past, the story of...
I don't know if y'all can hear this. There's like a fucking helicopter buzzing. Are we in trouble?
No.
Are they
on to
us?
Right down the street from the hospital.
Oh, this just happens.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that we were already interrupted a bit because I'm just imagining Nisha like fucking party boying around her living room. Like,
no,
I know
it's like traditional.
I'm
Indian
sure,
dance.
But I'm an idiot in my head. She's just like,
no.
Because I'm so dumb. Because that's what brings me total peace. Just like
twerking.
You know the party boy. No, we're talking before twerking.
Like Soulja Boy?
No, the party boy. You've never party boyed? Is this a regional thing?
Hold on. Maybe
it's like elbows up and you like.
Oh, yeah. Party boy. Okay, I didn't realize there was a name for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we get our first flashback into the past, the story of Chandini. Chandini helped women as a midwife, and Moya is in this story, and he comes to warn her that there's an army about to attack. So she asks him to help her protect the town, but in order to do so, he has to give her some of his power. Together, they are able to convince the army scouts that the town has been overtaken with a deadly illness, and the soldiers just move on by, because they're not about to fuck that.
Mm.
At the end of the flashback, Chandini looks at Nisha and says, "We are strong. Choose action." Every one of the flashbacks is going to end with the person who the story is about looking at her.
Okay.
And giving her some...
Aesop's Fable wisdom tidbit.
Yeah.
Fortune cookie.
Yep.
Okay.
So when she comes out of the flashback, she begins to search the internet about demon encounters and even calls the museum to ask about the statue, but comes up empty-handed.
Are they like, what statue?
They, not quite, but basically, like, we don't know what happened to it. It's gone, and that's super weird.
And they're not, like, concerned about...
They were like, well, maybe somebody took the paperwork out for something.
That, okay.
Yeah. And it's weird.
I feel like museums are less chill about things going missing than that.
Yeah, well, I think there was some finagling by the demon.
Yeah, I don't know. The demon of ignorance is like, I don't know what. Yeah, I don't
know. Anyway. Sorry. So when she comes out of the flashback, okay, I already did that part. My bad.
What is happening?
I don't know. I am so not on my game tonight. I am so sorry, everyone.
This is what happens when Paige rolls up a fat baby leg of a blunt and just smokes it up right before we record.
That's not what happened. I wouldn't be against it, but that's not what happened.
Maybe that would be better.
Maybe.
Are we going to do like a Joe Rogan, like we just get really high sometime? And
is that a Joe Rogan thing?
Totally. That's like his podcast format is like, I've never listened to an episode or whatever because I can't. They're so long. I see how long they are and who he's talking to. And I'm like, ugh. But apparently he just gets high with people and talks.
Nice.
It's a sweet gig if you can get it, you know?
Anyway. So after doing this, she goes to sleep. And another demon, not Moya, a different demon, visits her in a dream and essentially tells her that if she does not give him the power, he is going to kill her. So she goes to work. She wakes up. She's freaked out. She goes to work. After work, she comes home and does some more dancing. This time, we get the story of Tara. Tara has the gift of being able to see truth, and it was given to her by Moya when she was 5. As an adult, Tara is able to see a plague that is going to wipe out many villages. She tells the chief, and he basically locks the town down because they know they know about her power.
Uh-huh.
No one's allowed in or out. Tara even has to keep an old friend from entering the village because she was able to see that the woman was infected, which it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
But she, like, did what she had to do.
Sure.
At the end, Tara looks at Nisha and says, "We are unyielding. Choose hardness."
I always do. Sorry. I'm sorry.
The next day, JJ invites her to a fundraiser at the Art Institute, which she uses as an opportunity to investigate. When she gets to the Institute, Moya is there, and he reveals that he destroyed the statue. He got rid of it.
Okay.
Throughout the night, she begins talking to there's a bunch of aunties there, and she believes that the other demon that visited her in the dream is sending them to fuck with her, basically.
Okay.
She She gets through the rest of the night okay, though. As the days go on, Nisha is still being harassed. She's still being attacked by other demons and people that have essentially been, like, taken over. The demons have taken control of people and are using them to do mostly these protesters.
That's so fucking lame. Like, you're a demon. You possess somebody. You're gonna use them to fucking protest at an abortion? You could do anything, babe.
They're trying to get to Nisha.
Whatever. I don't know.
Anyway.
Watch her in the shower. That's more fun. I'm sorry. You got me. You said choose hardness. I'm choosing hardness. Go ahead.
So, essentially, all of this escalates one time and the cops get called to the clinic. She is able to walk away when Aaron shows up and, like, makes the cops leave because he's a white man, so he can do that.
Okay. Yep. Again.
Yep. So Aaron and Nisha begin to talk, and he explains why he changed his mind about abortion. He says a mutual friend of theirs, who is also pro-life, helped him to understand that even though she believes that life begins at conception, there's no proof, and other people can't be forced to do things based on her personal belief. By the end of the conversation, they agree to be cordial with each other while they're working. It's very interesting. He goes into more detail with this conversation, but it's very interesting. It's like Nisha basically describes this girl as, like, one of the few, like, actually pro-life people. Like, she is against abortion for herself, but also she is advocating for gun control and for, you know, paid maternity, like, all the things that it's like, okay, this is
these I are actually things believe in.
I life. Actually yeah. care about people type
and
of
children
thing.
And yeah.
So anyway, she goes home that night and she begins to dance again. And that is when we get the story of Layla. Layla meets Moya as a young girl and he gives her his gift of sight. One night she feels a disturbance and asks Moya what it was. Instead of telling her, he makes her fall asleep. And when she wakes up, her village is completely destroyed.
Hmm.
Moya tells her that an army came and destroyed the village in order to take the land for themselves. Layla flees to another town that was already converted. She lives among them, becomes an herbalist, bides her time. And then, after her old village was rebuilt by the colonizers, she puts a fog of ignorance over them so that they don't leave, and then lights the whole village on fire and burns them all in there with it.
Good.
So at the end, she looks at Nisha and says, "We are fierce, choose revenge."
Oh shit.
Yeah.
That's like not a common most art is like, "Hey, revenge is bad."
Yeah.
But this bitch is like, "No."
Yeah. So Nisha is done and she like does not know what to do with this story. So she's like, "Oh, we're just going to move on." Essentially, she goes for a walk to clear her mind and then goes to get on the L to head home, and Moya is waiting there for her. He shows her more about the magic, and together they practice by stopping the train that's coming. He tells her that she doesn't understand the danger the magic puts her in, and if she gives it back to him, he's going to protect her. When she asks why he wants it back, when he has freely given it to others in the past, he tells her that in the past, magic and power were easy to find and replaceable, but that is not the case anymore. So he believes that is why the other demon wants her power as well, because anytime a demon can find some power, they're going
to
try to get their hands on it.
It's like gasoline. Like, it's like you burn it up and you've used it, and it's a consumable resource.
Yeah, like, I feel like a lot of books that deal with magic, like, most magic wielders have, like, a limit of how much they can have. And so, they, like, demons, I guess, in the past, like, in these stories, like, demons commonly gave away parts of their magic, not realizing that this was not a...
Yeah.
That this was, like, a limited resource, and so...
I guess, like, I mean, I'm just remembering, like, for example, from the early episodes of The Witcher, like, when they're in their fucking witch school, they, like, hold a flower, and to, like, do magic, like, they kill... The flower dies in their hands, and, like, the life force is transformed into whatever. I guess that's more common than I'm thinking it is.
You know, this book... It was in the fantasy section. It was marketed as a fantasy. It didn't feel as much of a fantasy as it did like a speculative fiction or like a magical realism where like there is like magic and power, but like it didn't feel like a fantasy book.
Okay. So I mean, this is, I'm assuming this is like drawing from actual mythology.
I mean, all of like, there's like the gods and goddesses of Hinduism are mentioned, all of like these, the not demons, all of the demons, yeah, but like any of like the Hindu, the demons within like the Hindu, I don't even know if I want to say mythology because people still,
I mean,
I don't know.
So like in academic settings, like Christian mythology, it doesn't matter if people believe it or not. Okay. It's just a word.
I just I don't want to be disrespectful.
No, it's the word for shit you can't prove.
Okay. So like a lot of it is real, and like all of like the Hindu deities and the demons and all of those are, I was looking them up. It was, if I could say one good thing about this book, it's that it really piqued my interest about Hinduism.
Mm-hmm.
So
then why don't you come to?
Because I have a child by myself.
I teach a world religion class occasionally.
Have you done Hinduism
yet?
You told me you were going to send me the notes and you haven't done that yet.
I've never, I don't even, fuck, you're right, I did say I would do that, didn't I?
You're just going to have to give me private lessons.
Okay. Ganesh, the elephant one, my favorite.
Anyway. So, Nisha gets home. Can't go back to sleep, so she gets to the clinic early that morning, and she has a funny feeling. She meets up with JJ at the clinic, and they kind of have this weird discussion about the motivation of the aunties, and JJ seems a little bit, like, I don't know, sympathetic towards them.
Okay.
But she's like, yeah.
I get it, because, like, so, again, I never went, thank God, but, like, a lot of people that, like, there were a lot of kids that went with parents that didn't know what the fuck was actually happening. There's a lot of people who had, like, trauma shit they were working out. There's a lot of people that just genuinely believe that if they don't do it, Jesus is going to be mad and maybe won't let them into heaven. Like,
and those are, like, some of the things, like, they really believe that they're stopping murderers and stuff like that. And you're just like, okay, yeah, but also they suck.
It's true. Yes. It is. Yep.
So it's very, so they, it's just kind of this, that they kind of have that kind of conversation.
Yeah.
While having this conversation, Nisha begins to smell smoke, but no one else can smell it.
Oh, having a stroke?
No, she's not having a stroke. So she realizes.
Listeners at home, if you ever smell burnt toast and nobody else can smell it, go to the hospital.
Yeah. So she realizes that whatever is happening is, like, supernatural. It's being done by...
Listeners at home, don't assume that if this happens to you, it's supernatural.
No, it's probably not. Go to the hospital. You are having a stroke. Or you're burning your toast. But you're probably
Check your check your toaster.
Yes. And if there's no burning toast,
go to the hospital.
Okay. So she runs to the back of the clinic, and Aaron follows her and discovers that the clinic has been set on fire. She can see in the fire there is a shadow, and she hears a voice in her head telling her that she is in danger.
Ooh.
She is able to get herself and Aaron far enough away before the back of the building explodes, essentially. Oh. Yeah. Cool.
Oxygen tanks back there?
I don't know. I think part of it is, like, this other demon is, like, causing these things. Sure. So they close, the clinic is closed, obviously, so they can investigate and repairs can be made. She tries to stay with her mom, but her depression is getting real, real bad, and she just feels like a burden to her mom, so she leaves. When she gets home, she finds a strange man in her apartment. He introduces himself as Asmodeus, the Prince of Demons.
I know that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a Hindu one.
Not a Hindu one.
Okay.
So there are lots of demons from lots of different belief systems.
Asmodeus.
Yeah. So he's the prince of demons.
Sick.
He wants to take Nisha's power and will do anything to get it, including killing her and destroying the clinic. He has been influencing the aunties to be more violent towards the clinic. He offers her whatever she wants, essentially, in exchange for the power, but Nisha is like, I gotta think about it.
How about $1 million and a back rub and surf and turf?
I just want to be financially independent. That's fully.
Yeah. How about
independently wealthy?
How about you give me a debit card? It just doesn't run out.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't need to go crazy with it.
Yeah, I just want to be able to like buy the food that I want.
And go on vacation.
Go on vacations. And like go to the movies and stuff whenever I want to. And
like
babysitter whatever amount. Yeah.
If my job fucking is bringing me down, I want to be able to quit and not worry about being able to go to the doctor anymore. Yeah.
I'm going to set up that auto debit for all my bills. Never have to worry
totally.
About anything again.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
Nisha is...
Buy my podcast co-host of something nice.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Paige just winked at me. I know you couldn't see that, but she did.
Oh my gosh. Eventually, well, they won't be able to see us wink, but we might be able to do video stuff.
Okay. Yeah, a little teaser from Balcony Bitch. So, first of all, Balcony Bitch loved the episode
that I sent to him.
Thank
you, Balcony Bitch.
Now we have to send him this one, too. We just have to keep mentioning people and, like, guilting them into listening to us. Eventually, the show will just be, like, 98% shout-outs of people that we want to listen. So, anyway. Balcony Bitch, who makes, like, t-shirts and shit, was like, what if I just made you all, like, full face cover masks so that you could have, like, a video stream and get your shit on YouTube?
YouTube!
And I think
that's a great idea.
I think it's a great idea. I also have some very identifiable tattoos, so will need,
long
like,
sleeves,
long
sleeves
and fucking gloves. I don't, so I have this guy, and then I have an appointment on Saturday to get tattoos on both my hands. So,
oh,
like,
sweet.
I'm gonna need to have
to
fucking.
Some fingerless gloves. Some, like.
Yes. I'm gonna have to be fully
or just
fucking.
Keep your hands down.
Trip to fucking. Yep. Like, I'm planning on going to a country that doesn't allow women to drive. Like, gonna have to dress for the occasion. But. I think it's worth it.
I guess
it.
I have a pretty recognizable tattoo, too.
Just wear one sleeve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Or just, like, keep it behind your back and let people think you are missing an arm. And that'll misdirect them, because then they'll be looking for people that only have... that looks great. You look great with your arm tucked back into your shirt.
Can't see my tattoo?
You're fucking right. I can't see your tattoo. What we are fully like describing visuals that the audience would have, like we've fallen. This is not entertaining radio anymore.
Anyway,
where are we going?
I'm
What's
so
happening?
Sorry. I gotta find where I'm at.
I'm gonna get more water while you do that.
Okay. So Asmodeus warns her that he's not going to wait much longer. Later that day, Moya visits and Nisha tells him what happened. He says he's going to look into it and then encourages Nisha to search in the past again. So she turns on her music and begins to dance, and we get the story of Hira. Hira has a small amount of magic that allows her to make people forget. Wonder where she got that from. When she is grown, she leaves her family to find her destiny. That she feels is calling her.
Same.
She finds an army who is going to stand against foreign invaders.
Not how it went for me. But...
Yeah, sorry. They have a demon who is like essentially bolstering their army, giving them power. Hira insists that she can stop the demon. So she and like some scouts go and find him. She's able to wipe the demon's memories of allegiance to the invaders. Weakens them and allows the army to defeat the invaders. When the battle is over, she goes home to her husband and children. She looks at Nisha and she says, "We can be happy. Choose to be content." And Nisha is like, what the fuck is that advice? Like, I think the exact words are like, that's the worst advice I've ever heard.
I mean, I don't know. The older I get, the more I'm like, fuck, I guess.
Yeah, I just gotta relax. Nisha's still, she's, you know, she's still figuring her shit out.
That's, yeah, that's fair.
So she gets back to work. She goes back to work. And she receives flowers with a note from Moya to leave. Leave her after work. Why would I write it that way? To find him after work. What the fuck?
Who wrote your notes?
Me today, very fast.
I know, I watched you do it.
While she's still at work, she helps a mom with a young boy named Jason. They traveled all the way from Texas so that she could get an abortion. Because she feels like she can't handle a second child at this time. After work, she goes and she meets Moya at the train station. After work, she meets Moya at the train station after work, and he teaches her how to use her powers some more.
Is this the last episode? Are we fucking done?
No,
I have another one written.
I promise the next one will be better because the book, next book that I have, I really, really loved. So it will be much better.
I promise the next episode will be better because it's my episode.
So the next day she practices using her power on some of the aunties who are harassing patients at the clinic. She then looks out into the crowd. She sees Moya in the distance, and all of a sudden, one of the aunties starts having a seizure. And she remembers that Moya is not only the demon of ignorance, he is apparently also the demon of epilepsy.
Sure. Why not?
So cool. Moya gave this guy a seizure. Aaron is able to help the man until an ambulance arrives. Then also later that day, one of the doctors, Dr. Levy, who's kind of like the head honcho, gets a phone call from her daughter saying that she was given a threatening note directed towards Dr. Levy. When Nisha hears about this, they tell Dr. Levy basically says that the person was able to get past security at the school and like nobody realized Ooh. That they were there. And so she's like, demon.
Demon. Yep.
So she... immediately after that gets a call from her mother. Someone working for Asmodeus is at her mother's house. He basically says, you've got like 3 fucking days mm-hmm. to make a decision. So Nisha goes home and Moya is there with evidence that he got from the man who he gave the seizure to. It's a key card that leads them to an office building and they sneak in and start snoopy snooping. Nisha finds a letter addressed to a crisis pregnancy center that is near the clinic. It is from a, quote, donor who wants to help shut down the clinic, mm-hmm. and it contains information about the clinic and all of the employees. They hear people coming, and Nisha bounces out of there, leaves Moya behind. He can take care of himself.
You want to know something shitty about the crisis pregnancy care centers? So, you know what those are?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Listeners at home, if you're not familiar, crisis pregnancy care centers are essentially organizations that, like, exist to, like, bring women in and talk them out of getting abortions. Some to varying degrees. Some of them actually provide support and care for the women. Some of them don't. There's a lot of, like, forcing them to get ultrasounds mm-hmm. and telling them all kinds of shit about abortions that isn't true. And it's very manipulative. It's very shitty. The church I grew up in fundraised for them on a regular basis. I have given them a good amount of money in my younger years. But they recently, crisis pregnancy care centers, changed their name to the Women's Choice Network.
Boo.
With the exact intention of women seeing that and thinking it is an abortion clinic and going to, like, intentionally tricking women into thinking they're going to an abortion provider and being met with propaganda and bullshit and shame. So fuck them thoroughly.
Fuck them all the way off.
Yep.
Anyway, mm-hmm. off a cliff.
Yeah, don't just make them come. They don't deserve that.
Get them right there, right edge there, him, and then push them off cliff. A cliff.
Yes. Literally.
God.
Where were, what? What's happening? Women, cross friends, yeah.
She gets home, so she's like, I gotta bounce, and Moya's, he's fine, because he's a demon. She gets home and decides to dance again, and that is when we get the story of Usha. Usha, sorry. That one is somebody's.
I was going to say, we know that name.
But I feel like people don't always pronounce her name correctly.
Of course
so
not.
I meant to look all of these names up, and I didn't, and that's on me. Usha is a midwife as well, and performs abortions in secret. Basically, she is trying to help women stay out of the hands of another man who performs abortions. His nickname is The Butcher.
Oh, God.
Because he doesn't know what he's doing
and
kills women all the time.
That's what happens when it's difficult to get safe and legal abortions. Yeah. You get butchers.
Yeah. So a friend of Usha calls her for help with his sister-in-law, who is pregnant after having an affair. The woman is unsure. She does not know if she wants to have an abortion or not. And so Usha is like, no, I'm not going to give you anything until you're sure.
Right.
So she leaves and runs into our good friend Moya, and he gives her the gift of sight, as he does. A week later, she's called back by her friend and finds that the woman has bled out after an attempted abortion from the butcher. The butcher tells the police that Usha was his accomplice. And so she's taken into custody, and somebody is able to bail her out. And she is pissed. She thinks Moya cursed her. So she goes around. She's looking for hints of magic. She finds magic at this old friend's house. So she goes in and she finds Moya. She ends up pushing him into the statue. And through, like, it, like, cuts him. And so then they're, like, blood merges together. And essentially, she channels his magic through her into the statue, and that's how he becomes trapped in that statue.
Okay, sure.
She passes out, and when she wakes up, Moya is gone. Obviously, he's in the statue.
He's in the statue, yep.
So she looks at Nisha and says, "We are brave. Choose to be bold."
Okay. This book is such a fucking formula.
Yeah.
It's just like, a thing happens topside. She goes home, she dances, there's a vision, there's a message. A thing happens to, like,
yeah.
Oof.
It's hard. I'm so sorry, friends.
No, this is what it is sometimes.
So she wakes up and she finally decides she's going to tell her mom what's been happening. And her mom actually takes it pretty well. she's like, I pray and do all of these things. Who's to say demons aren't real? What the heck?
If I told my mom I was being visited by demons, she would be all over that. Like, no hesitation. She would just believe me.
Yeah.
Man, should I? No. No, I won't.
So she offers to help, despite Nisha insisting otherwise. The next day, JJ shows up at Nisha's apartment and shows Nisha an article about someone recording things at the clinic. JJ suggests it might be Aaron. And we finally get a bit more information about what the hell happened with Aaron. Essentially, what happened is Nisha had accompanied JJ to a clinic, like a Planned Parenthood or something, because JJ was nervous about getting her IUD.
Okay.
IUD, yeah. When they left, they walk out and they see Aaron protesting in the crowd. JJ tells Nisha that Aaron would have had a right to know had she been getting an abortion. But what JJ doesn't know is that Nisha did find out later that she was pregnant and did have an abortion.
Okay.
Nisha's mom then texts her. She gets a text from her mom saying to reach out to a childhood friend, Shreya, who is studying demons for her PhD. So Nisha reaches out and they agree to meet for coffee. She goes home and does some more dancing.
Yep.
Oh, so she goes home and she tries to dance, but Moya shows up, and Nisha is like, "What the fuck were you doing with Usha?" And he's like, "I was trying to protect her," basically trying to defend himself. And he says he was keeping his promise to Chandini, the first girl, to look out for those like her. They begin to argue, and Moya tries to use magic to take his power back from Nisha and fails and leaves. So Nisha goes back into work. She is struggling. The clinic is struggling more than ever. She's burnt out. They're losing funding. Volunteers are becoming more and more scarce. Even JJ tries to convince her to find a new job. Nisha agrees to think about it. Then she goes to get coffee with Shreya. She doesn't tell Shreya everything, but Shreya does give her some books about demons and also offers to volunteer at the clinic. So that's cool. She visits her mom and asks her mom for help with a fundraiser for the clinic, only to find out that her mom has already started planning one and has been able to get a lot of help from their community.
Cool.
Yeah. The fundraiser, they like literally pull it together in like a couple weeks. It's crazy. So
okay. Okay, sure, Jan.
Yeah.
Listen, as someone who has some experience there, fuck you, first of all.
Listen. So fundraiser's going great until Asmodeus uses his magic to basically lure people into like a stupor of lust.
Very weird. Yeah.
The only person not affected is Shreya. They don't really say why, but my guess is that she's asexual.
I was going to say, is she just not built for that?
So she's like, hey, Nisha, what the heck is going on here? And Nisha tells her everything.
Maybe it's like with ADHD where like caffeine chills you out. Like she is always in a stupor of lust, so it had the opposite effect.
Anyway, Shreya believes her and offers to help. The next day at the clinic, Nisha decides to kind of prod at Aaron's thoughts about like, hey, what do you think about, you know, women having to tell, like women should tell their male partners before having an abortion or whatever. And he's kind of like, it's not any of my business.
Yeah. Like, if you don't want to tell your partner, it's for a fucking reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So he basically tells her it's not his right to know. Nisha decides that Aaron truly has changed. She's kind of like, this doesn't seem like he is being affected by demons. He's not. Like, this like seems like genuine.
Mm-hmm.
So she decides that he's truly changed and confesses that she had an abortion and that the baby was his. Aaron is a little bit like, oh man, that sucks. But also, again, none of his business. He doesn't have a right to know. Or he didn't have a right to know, especially with the way that he treated her.
Yeah.
So he kind of encourages Nisha, like, you, like, life sucks, but like, you are strong and you can keep going. They kind of have like a nice little tender moment. We're moving on from the past. When she gets home, Moya is there again, and he basically tells her he's sorry for blowing up at her and he's gonna help her defeat Asmodeus. So he leaves, and Nisha is like, okay, we're gonna do some more dancing. So we get the rest of Usha's story. So Usha's former friend finds her in the house and basically tells her to get bent. It fast forwards to like her trial, and the lawyer explains that it was not her who killed the woman, it was this butcher guy.
Mm-hmm.
They have a witness. The wife of Usha's former friend comes forward as a witness as to what the butcher did. So they still punish her because she performs abortions in general.
Sure.
And British people don't like that. And like the British are, this is like,
yeah,
that's when this story takes place.
Yeah.
So they sentence her to a year in the women's penitentiary.
Okay.
Penitentiary.
You're right.
Okay. After the trial, her former friend comes up to her and basically is like, when you get out, do not come back here. Like, I don't ever want to see your face again. And she asks him, like, what did I do? and she hears the wife very quietly say, like, you didn't do what he said, essentially. Mm. Like, you didn't listen. So she kind of realizes, oh, like, her friend was angry that she didn't do what he wanted her to do, and he was the one who arranged to have her arrested, right. Not
right.
Moya. She begins to understand that even though Moya is a demon, he's not really the one who's evil. It's the humans who are evil.
Yeah.
So Usha looks at Nisha and says, we can be forgiving. Choose trust. So Nisha meets up with Moya again and accepts his help. They go to the office again and they kind of have a little bit of a stakeout. And who should walk out of that building but fucking JJ.
Oh, no. JJ.
So she sees JJ, immediately texts the receptionist, is like, take JJ out of the system. She's not allowed back in. Texts JJ, says, don't come in for your shift. We have it covered. And then she goes home and dances one more time.
Okay.
We see, we are back to Chandini. We see her using her magic to continue to help women. And she's not alone. Moya is there with her. It's kind of insinuated that they are together in some
way. Sure. Yeah, sure.
She grows old and makes Moya promise to look after her descendants, and he agrees. Chandini then looks at Nisha and says, make your own choices. You know yourself. And Nisha's like, yeah, I already knew that, but thanks. So the next morning, Shreya calls and tells Nisha that she's been studying, and she said Nisha might be able to strengthen her power through a moment of personal victory. Not seeing how that would help, Nisha's like, okay, I'm going to go to work. JJ is waiting at the door, and Nisha tells her that she knows what she's been doing and to go home, but JJ refuses to leave. She tells the receptionist, hey, keep an eye on her through the cameras, but by the time the receptionist looks at the cameras, JJ is gone. Nisha hears gunshots and the clinic goes into lockdown. She hears a scream from the back of the clinic and she runs to find a man with a gun at the back door asking for the doctors to come out and renounce their ways. He goes to shoot a patient, but one of the regular aunties steps in front of him to try to stop him. Dr. Levy comes forward and goes to follow the man out, but he shoots her when a gust of fire comes through the door. Asmodeus comes out of the fire and tries to take Nisha's power. They have, like, a bit of, like, a skirmish. She begins to hear a familiar song playing. She says she thinks it's coming out of a speaker that auto-connected to her phone, but I feel like it's probably some sort of, like...
This is the song that never ends. Was that the song?
No.
Damn.
She begins to think of the women who came before her and draw strength from them. She gets a surge of power and is able to extinguish the flames and overcome Asmodeus, and then she passes out. Final chapter. We skip forward to the last day of Lent, which is also Dr. Levy's funeral. Dr. Levy did not survive.
Yikes.
She burned through her magic, but has found kind of like a new lease on life. Her depression isn't gone, but she feels strong enough to like fight back against it and to keep going. She decides she wants to go back to law school and, you know, continue to help women have the right to abortion.
Cool.
And that's how the book ends.
Happy Easter.
Yeah. I guess.
That's the end of Lent.
Yeah.
It's Easter.
Yeah.
Yep.
Happy Easter. It's like the day before Easter.
Whatever.
Anyway. Yeah. Favorite moments. So most of this book was just right in the middle for me.
Just fine.
But there is this part at the end, not at the end, but after the fundraiser, all of the people in her community and like the Desi community who they, I guess it must be a thing to call them aunties and uncles. Uncles
yes.
And aunties. Yeah. So all of the uncles and aunties are there fighting the anti-abortion people and like making like body chains and like yelling at them and like just like all this crazy stuff. It's really funny. And it was also just kind of this, like, even though Nisha felt like she was alone, she wasn't, and she had all of these people there to support her. So it was just kind of like a cool feeling. And some of the things that the auntie said, and like talking about telling these protesters that they never had sex and stuff like that, and like
probably
it was just funny.
Probably true.
I really want to go and talk about the part that made me angry and want to throw something, throw my book against the wall. There is a part of the book, I left it out in the summary because I wanted to like just talk about it here. So do you remember the woman with the little boy named Jason who came from Texas?
Yes.
So they find out, after they find out that someone has been filming stuff in the clinic, they find out that this woman was filmed, and the film was given to her partner who was abusive.
Okay.
And he shot her and her son. And it kind of, it's this moment where Nietzsche's like, am I actually helping anybody?
I'm so pro-life, I'm going to murder my whole family.
Yeah. And like, Jesus. I don't know, I just feel like that's I don't know.
It's insane.
It's insane. It literally makes no sense.
But like Family Annihilators, like it never makes sense. It's always some fucking crazy,
like,
yeah.
I just don't, I don't get this, like, or even like right now with that family down in Mississippi. Did you hear about that?
No, what?
It was two women, and one of the women had her one-year-old with her, and they were leaving the Walmart, and somebody at the Walmart thought that they were stealing a package of diapers.
Oh, I did fucking hear about this. Yeah,
and it's like all these conservatives are like, well, you know, they shouldn't have ran away and they shouldn't have been looking guilty and all this stuff. And it's like, are you kidding me? You people will protect a clump of cells in a woman's uterus till the cows come home.
What if they were fucking stealing it? Who gives a fuck?
Who gives a shit? And I don't even think that they were. But even if they were, that doesn't mean you shoot at them.
Yeah, people fucking need diapers.
Yeah, and like, they're like, well, they're pulling out this whole, like, well, they were driving towards the officers, and then I'm like, I'm sorry, but if your first instinct when someone is driving their car towards you is not jump out of the way, then there's something wrong with you.
Also, as with the Renee Nicole Good situation, shooting at somebody driving a car towards you isn't going to protect you.
It's going to make it worse, because then they're not going to have any control. If you shoot, like, it's literally insane. Mm-hmm. These pro-life people who don't actually care, or the second somebody is someone that they deem lesser than them, they're going to come up with any excuse as to why it was okay to do those things.
Yep. Or if a cop does it, it's got to be the right thing.
Yeah, the cop got like paid administrative leave. How crazy is it?
Somebody fucking give me paid administrative leave.
You get more time off.
That's
in
a
America
reward
for killing a child than you do for birthing one.
Jesus fucking Christ, that's. Oh, serenity now.
Anyway, so that part, like it, I didn't see it coming at all, and it just like. Mm-hmm. Ripped me open.
Yeah, that fucking sucks. Sucks that shit happens.
Yeah. And, like, it's not even, like, I mean, it does happen in real life, but, like, I don't know, I think because it's, like, that shit actually happens that I was, like, oh, my God. I don't know. That part fucked me up. Even I was, like, do I want to keep reading this book after that? And I was, like, I gotta finish it for the podcast, so.
Do it for the pod.
Do it for the pod. Favorite character? Probably Moya. I just feel like he was a pretty complex character. I don't know, and he was kind of funny too, and just kind of like put on this air of like, you stupid humans, but at the end of the day it's like,
you
but
like
you
us.
Like
yeah
us.
Exactly.
Review of the writing, let's talk about it. This is gonna be a long episode and it's not even good. I'm so sorry.
Sometimes kind bad of... episodes are about the friends you made along the way.
So, kind of like what you said, the book, it just kind of felt like it was just going through like a formula. Some things happened with the demons. She goes home, she dances, she learns a little bit more. She fights with Moya, more things happen with the demon. Like, it just felt like it was, like, cycling through a lot, and it didn't. And I think, too, I was wanting more fantasy elements, and there just wasn't quite enough for me personally to consider this book actually fantasy. Like, it, like I said, it seemed more like speculative fiction or, like, magical realism. Like, there is some there, but I was like, she's not, like, she only, like, uses, like, the magic only comes into play a couple of times. Yeah. I don't know. It just felt not quite enough to be fantasy for me, and so I think there was a bit of, like, unmet expectations there.
Yeah.
There were parts of it I liked, though. Like, I did like, again, I liked learning about the Hindu, like, beliefs. I liked learning about all, like, she goes a lot more into detail about the dancing and all of the parts of it and stuff. And, like, it got me really interested, and I spent a lot of time Googling and looking up videos and looking and reading Wikipedia articles. So, like, that part was really cool, and, like, having something to, like, jump off of to go and learn more things. So I appreciated that about the book. I also just felt like, for me, obviously, people need to hear that abortion is a human right. And this book maybe could have been eye-opening for someone who was, like, on the fence, who isn't sure. But I think for me, I was like, okay, yeah, but I already know.
It was too basic.
This wasn't anything groundbreaking for me.
Have you
as far as that part went, so.
Have you ever read The Cider House Rules?
I have not.
So I came across that book when I was in college, and it was, like, the thing that definitively, like, flipped me from one side to the other. I want to say it's written in the fucking, I think it's set in the 30s. I'm not sure if it was written or, anyway, it's this doctor who runs an orphanage and performs abortions on the DL. And it's a long form. There's lots of story elements, but basically he's like, look, I have to do this because I know what I'm doing, and I will treat these women with care and respect, and it is not legal for them to do it anywhere else. So, like, I have a responsibility to care for these women. There was just, it's a really good, complex, but it was just, like, it gave abortion and the people that get them this, like, human face that I had never been been shown before.
Yeah.
So art like this is important. And, like, I'm sure if I read that again, I'd be like, yeah, duh, fucking basic.
Right.
But at the time, I was like, oh, my God. Like,
I'm sure for some people that this book, if they are kind of questioning, if they're right on the edge there of, like, maybe this whole pro-life thing isn't quite all it's cracked up to be, I'm sure this could be a very pivotal or groundbreaking book. It just wasn't for me.
Sure.
I think I gave it, like, a 3.5. Because, like, there were some things that I liked. There were some things that I didn't quite like. I think overall, there is an audience for this book. It just maybe wasn't me. And I think, too, I was like, this is just making me sad about the state of our world.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're going to be done because I've been talking a long time.
Yeah, we're fucking done with this.
Yeah. Let's move on. I have a much better book for the next book episode.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. Anyway, find us on Instagram at Page and Pixel PC.
Yep.
Comment, like, send us messages. Tell us what to read and what to play.
Tell me if you ever masturbated thinking about me.
Stop. Do not post that on our.
Don't post it, but, like, tell me.
Do not. First of all, I run the Instagram. You'll never see it.
That you just pass it along.
I don't want to see it. I don't want to.
If that's your message, at the top be like, this one's for Pixel, and then a bunch of spaces.
But then I'll know what it is
and who it's from, huh?
Yeah.
Find a way. Love will find a way. Anyway.
Once we get our masks, we can have our own pages for our personas.
Ooh, perfect.
Anyway, until next time, read hard.
Play hard. And my body, my choice.